Some replacement level dudes talking about their home team. Starting a Braves podcast was their daggum dream. They like Nick Markakis, even the long ball. One day they'll have more clout than Ken Rosenthal. Oh, you're listening to that Knockoma Nation podcast show. Oh, Knockoma Nation podcast show.
Heyo, it's another episode of the Knockoma Nation podcast show. I'm your host, Ken Hendricks. That's JT Holton. How you doing, JT?
Hi, Ken.
Hi, buddy. And Josh Rhubarb Brown is lost in internetless hell. It's probably more heaven, to be honest. But he's in the process of returning to his roots of Georgia. And he's enjoying the ups and downs of getting new internet set up. So Josh will be back with us in the new year. But, yeah.
All the fun times you have when you're moving. And, like, the fun just begins when you unload all your stuff.
Oh, for sure.
And then it's like, oh, when's the internet? Oh, the power, the water, the cable, the, yeah. You know, all yeah. The other stuff.
All your subscriptions to... Yeah. You know, inappropriate magazines, whatever, you know,
right.
Like all that stuff's got to be fixed. And when I say inappropriate magazines, I mean like guns and gardening guns.
I subscribe to Garden and Buns.
It's a little different. It's a slightly different. Yeah. That's a men's gardening magazine. Is that right?
Yes. Gardening / baking.
Okay.
Which is the buns part.
I see. Yeah. I see.
Right.
I see. You know, I get it. It's a process to get moved, and they are, for those that are wondering, he is in the state of Georgia again. They do have a house. They are in that house. They're just working on getting everything set up. So, like I said, Josh will be back with us in the new year. We're looking forward to that. Reminder to all of our Knockoma Nation listeners, next week we will have an off week. We always take off the week between Christmas and New Year to enjoy time with family and to be quite honest, to get away from all you knuckleheads for at least a week. But yeah, so here
and
we are.
From each other.
Yeah, that's true. From each other is probably the most important part. You know, we normally, for our Christmas special, do something zany and goofy and completely ridiculous. We've done Whoville with the Donahue-ville. We've done The Ghosts of Christmas Past, Future, and Present with Bryce Harper and all kinds of... I think there was Babe Ruth was involved in that and somebody else that I can't remember now. And but yeah, every year we do a kind of zany, crazy Christmas special. But 2020 has been such a radical year, JT, that I thought we would do something radical and zany by being normal? Maybe that's not the right word, but...
As long as I'm not going to have to sing.
You're not going to have to sing?
Okay.
Well...
We've heard how that goes.
We might. You might have to sing at the end. I'm just saying. But, yeah. Anyway. But, yeah. I was watching Moneyball a little while ago, JT.
It's good. It's good, isn't it?
It's a good movie. It's a good movie. You know, but Art Howe gets a really bad rip in that movie. He's not that bad a guy. That story didn't play out quite the way the movie makes it out to be. And Art wasn't quite as big an a-hole as the movie makes him out to be all along the way. Kind of didn't do him 100% justice there along the way. But, you know, that story, another thing you take from it is I think a lot of people took Moneyball as this identity that like, the future of baseball was OBP and all this kind of stuff, when really that's not the essence of the movie at all. If you really get down to it, the story of the Oakland A's and Billy Bean and what he did was a lot more focused on like market inefficiencies, finding what wasn't there, what it's being undervalued in baseball and turning it into value for a team that doesn't have as much money, right? So the way a story's framed, though, kind of, it doesn't matter what originally happened. It's just the story that we hear. So that's like the story people know. So if you ask most people about the Oakland A's story, they're going to give you the Brad Pitt version, right? They're going to give you the Moneyball movie version, you know? when in reality, it was a lot more messy. It wasn't so obvious. And the strategy wasn't even the one that I think a lot of people think the movie kind of embraces and seems to promote and push and that kind of thing. But I say all that, JT, to come back to this. The way we know a story kind of affects how we perceive that story and its role in our life. And so tonight, as we record this podcast, I want to share a story that's super important to me and you, and that is the story of Christmas. A lot of people think they know the story of Christmas. You probably all heard the Linus telling us the Peanuts version of the Christmas story, where he reads the descriptions from Luke and all that, and I'm sure everyone listening has been in a Christmas story at some point in their life. You've been like the angel in the choir when you were like 4 years old and had like the bad halo and the old white sheet that somebody threw over you that made you look more like a ghost than an angel. Or you were one of the wise men, and you like dropped your incense while you were trying to walk up to the stage while the little baby and somebody's daughter listening, I guarantee you somebody's daughter has dropped baby Jesus while on stage playing Mary. Like, it's happened. You know, she's like holding him in her arms and bloop, right, just flat down on the ground. It's happened. So all of that being said, it does matter how the story goes, and I think we sometimes get a very watered down version of the story. So I thought tonight I would just sit back, JT, if it's cool with you, and I just tell you the Christmas story. Does that sound cool, man?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Well, our story starts actually a long time before Christmas. Now, some of you listening, I don't know if you all believe in Christmas the way that me and JT do, but for us, this is a true story. For some of you, maybe you consider it not to be a completely true story. That's okay. I just ask that you sit back and enjoy the story. But this story actually starts in the endless past. So we go way, way back, JT. I'm talking about back before Mary and Joseph, back before King David, back before, you name it, Noah, back before Abraham, back before Adam and Eve, back before the dinosaurs, back before whatever you vision, right? Endless past. There's a king, a creator, who decides that he wants a family. He sits down one day and says, I'd really like a family. And he makes said family. But he doesn't just make them, he makes the earth around them. And he starts out, first of all, by making two kingdoms. He makes a kingdom of heaven and a kingdom of earth. And he goes from there and develops the kingdom of heaven and the kingdom of earth up to be these realms that his family are going to live in. He's going to encompass them all. He's going to create them all. And they're going to be beautiful and perfect, and he even declares that they're going to be good. And so he comes down and he makes man in his image. He makes them male and female, and he puts them in this garden, this place designed for them, and he tells them, says, the very first words out of his mouth, the very first words that man ever hears is him saying, be blessed, be fruitful and multiply. You are blessed, empowered to prosper. So that's the very first words that he ever hears. So man is in this garden, he's a blessed man, he's empowered to prosper, he's naming all the animals, he's chilling with God every day, he's chilling with his father, he's got dominion, he's got this kingly sort of role going on in the earth, he's got this family sort of thing going on with the creator of all things, and he's got a wife who's right there in the middle of it, and the one thing God tells them not to do is to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. But, long story short, the snake convinces them that they're not like God yet, despite God making them in his image. The snake convinces them, says, look, if you eat of this tree, you'll then be like God, because you'll know good from bad, right? So, of course, we know the story. They eat of the tree. They get the knowledge of what's good and what's bad. And from there, they become ruled by being good and not being bad. And God says, I don't know where you are anymore, Adam. I can't find you because I don't know how to think that way. I don't think based on good and bad. I think using a different system, so I don't even know where you are. But in this moment of all creation, JT, in this moment in the creation of the world, the greatest moment has now come to this pinnacle of darkness where man is now condemned to die. Dying, thou shalt die. And they come to this place where they're cursed. They have to work, toil, sweat. They have to have pains and labor, all this kind of stuff. But the most important thing that we need to take away from this is this, that there is now enmity, or there's this barrier between, this aggression almost between God and man. And in the beginning, when God created the heaven and the earth, he hovers over chaos. He creates, he blesses, he creates man. But it all comes back down to this moment of being that all hope seems lost. But God says this. He says, look, I'll give you a sliver of hope. One day, one of your children, your son, your seed, will crush the snake's head, but in doing so, he'll bruise his heel. And so there's this little bit of hope that someday this snake's head is going to be crushed. So we go into darkness. We go through time. We know how time rolls. And now, JT, I'd like to set the scene of Christmas, because it is important to start way back there so we kind of have a picture of how this happens. 500 years before the first Christmas, God goes silent. There's no if we look at our Bibles before the New Testament, there's no recorded movements of God in the last 500 years before Jesus is born. So now catch the scene of 15-year-old Mary, JT. She's young. She is a woman by Jewish tradition, but she is a 15-year-old, or 14, or 16, or whatever age you want to make her, but she's basically a right in the middle of her teens female. It doesn't get much more mentally chaotic than Mary. Do you know any 15-year-olds, JT? Any 15-year-old girls? 14-year-old girls?
No, I do not.
Okay. I'm glad you don't, maybe. But continuing the story. Yeah, seriously, though, do you remember 15-year-old girls when you were in school?
Absolutely.
Okay, there you go.
They're crazy people.
They're completely insane. So she is, she's a catch, right? She's 15. She's looking good in her Jewish scarf over her head and her long cloak like we wear. You know, I'm sure it actually looked nothing like that, but that's the way we like to picture her, her dark brown skin. And she is engaged to a nice 30-year-old man. Now, this seems odd in our culture, but in their culture, not weird at all. Totally normal. 30-year-old Joseph, 15-year-old Mary, right? I'm getting a funny look from JT. Enjoying this funny look. I like it when I get funny looks telling the Christmas story.
I mean, I never really thought of it that way. It's kind of, I say it's weird, but hey, when I was 30, my wife was 20. It's not too far apart, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, JT's a cradle robber to begin with. We know this. Yeah. Hey, if you got it, work it, you know.
If you're comparing me to Joseph, I'll take it.
You'll take it. Joseph, though, Joseph is a well-to-do stonemason. We know of him, you know, we're traditionally taught he was a carpenter, but let's be honest, no one in that century was building anything out of wood. It was,
and they didn't have carpet for the most part.
He was not a carpenter either. He was a stonemason. He was good at cutting stone, stacking stone, and making houses out of stone because, you know, he was good at getting stoned. But anyway, Joseph is a catch, man. He's got an up-and-coming stonemason business. He's in the prime of his life at 30. I mean, this dude could pretty much have any chick he wants, and he's got Mary set up for this marriage. So, in all this, Mary suddenly finds out when an angel appears to her, the Lord comes to her, and the words actually are the very same as when God created the heavens and the earth. It says that his spirit hovered over the face of the deep. Well, we see those exact same words used where it's talking to Mary, and an angel says, "And the Lord shall overshadow you." That means to hover over, right? It's a very sensual sort of thing, implication here of a very intimate sort of exchange. And this angel says, "The Lord will hover over you, and you'll conceive, and you'll have a child." Now, we like to paint that out as this really pretty scene where Mary really trusts God, and it says she hides all those things in her heart. And that sounds good, but 15-year-old girl just found out she's pregnant while engaged to 30-year-old Awesome Catch in super religious society. Yeah, I'd hide things in my heart too, because telling people about them might not be all that cool. 15. So here we are. We've got a single unwed teenage mother with dark skin who is engaged to highly reputable man that is all set up for, she has the perfect life sitting in front of her, and now, without asking for it, she is pregnant. Now, I don't know about you, but if, first of all, my 15-year-old daughter turned up pregnant, we'd be having some issues. Secondly, if I'm Joseph and I'm engaged to said girl and she comes and tells me she's now pregnant, then we have some issues. This is not going well. You know, hyper-religious society, this is pretty much the end of Mary's life. If Joseph doesn't take her, she's now like forbidden fruit for everyone, because what reputable man is going to marry a woman who had a child out of wedlock? That doesn't happen in this society. It's Jewish society is very strict on these things. You don't do that. That's weird. So here's a girl, chaos incarnate, and God hovers over her. And inside of her, he chooses to bring hope to the world through chaos incarnate. Now, an angel tells her, says, "Don't worry, fear not," although that would be the first thing popped into my mind, would be a whole lot of fear. But he says, "Fear not." Joseph doesn't put her away. Instead, an angel appears to him and says, "Fear not, take Mary unto you." Now, if I'm Joseph, I don't care what kind of angel shows up, I'm having a hard time believing that the girl I'm engaged to got pregnant by God, right? Like, this seems weird. A virgin girl got pregnant, but I know it wasn't me because we weren't married yet. So this is weird. It's weird. There's a lot of chaos going on here. But yeah. If Joseph is sitting there and he's basically in the position where he's been cucked, if we were using modern terminology, man, I would have a hard time with that. It would be a challenge for me to believe, even with like some awesome angel standing in front of me, some awesome angel pouring out this deep revelation of, "Oh, you should have her." But I'm sorry, JT, if my fiance comes to me and tells me, "Yeah, I got pregnant by God," this is going to be a weird and awkward conversation.
Yeah, I'd rather her say that. God than...
Yeah. There we go.
I'd rather her say God than, like, anybody else, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, are you really believing God? You know, I mean, are you really believing it's God at this point? I mean...
No.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, even if an angel shows up to me, like, and I'm no doubt that it's an angel, I'm still having a hard time with this. Like, this is difficult, right? So okay. So Joseph decides to still marry her. Well, I can guarantee you they didn't get married like a week later, because that's not how Jewish ceremonies work. This is probably several months until they get married. They kind of keep it hidden. Right, but she is with child, and now, JT, the entire family, Joseph's family, is having a family reunion in Bethlehem where every person that has ever been related to you is now having to go to the city. Now, here's the thing, JT. Not only do we now have to make a, month-long trek back to the city of Bethlehem, we have to do it with a pregnant teenager. Who I am not sure didn't just cuck me, right? Like, this is weird.
Yeah. You know, usually when you're telling the Christmas story, you don't expect to hear the word cuck involved.
It's not your typical.
This is the Nakahoma Nation Christmas story.
Yeah,
so.
Well, I mean, it's kind of the true story here, you know? But
yeah.
I'm just saying. And so they get on, you know, she is out here and as they're riding along, you know, she's having all these crazy cravings, you know, like any pregnant woman would do, you know. I bet she's wanting some some gefilte fish like along the way. And Joseph's like, there's no gefilte fish around here. Like, what the heck? We're in the middle of the desert, woman. There's no gefilte fish here, you know. Or maybe she's wanting some milts, which is like cow spleen. It's a big Jewish dish, you know. She's like,
matzo ball soup.
I'm dying some milts, you know. I need some milts, you know.
Matzo ball soup is actually delicious. I can vouch for matzo ball soup. Yeah.
She's like waking up at 3 a.m. craving gefilte fish, you know. It's like, and I need some good gefilte fish. That's a fun word to say, too, JT. Have you ever noticed that?
Gefilte fish.
Yeah, that also makes me think of Rush Hour, where Chris Tucker's trying to say gefilte fish. You remember that? Like, it's all the outtakes of him sitting on the plane trying to say gefilte fish. Anyway. So they embark on this, like, month-long journey. Pregnant 15-year-old. All her cravings and insanity you're sure was there. I like how people, like, always try to make this out like it was some sweet journey and, like, Joseph let her ride on the donkey. Like, first of all, they probably didn't ride a donkey. They probably walked. And even if they did, I guarantee you Joseph rode the donkey and she walked most of the time because that was how the culture worked back then. Like, you know, women did not have the place of esteem that they do today. And Joseph may have even been a really kind man, but that just wasn't how things operated. So they get back to the city of Bethlehem. Small little town, JT. Everybody they know's there. And look, JT, this part's not written in the story very well, but you know good and well that Aunt Susan was there. And she's like, I can count, young man. Y'all been married for 3 months, and that girl is a lot more pregnant than 3 months.
Right.
You know, and Cousin Rachel is like, yeah, you know it. What have you been doing? Right.
The church communities of those days were a lot like the church communities of today, mainly because people as a whole haven't changed their behavior whatsoever. So there was a lot of gossip, there was a lot of talk, a lot of whispers, and that was a big thing, obviously a shameful thing for that society to be, you know, pregnant outside of marriage.
And it wasn't just shameful for Mary, because it was definitely shameful for her, no doubt. Like, the end of her life if Joseph doesn't keep her, right? Like, she's never getting married to another guy with future prospects if she has a kid out of wedlock before her first husband. Like, she may get married again, but it's not going to be reputable, you know. But also to Joseph, like, in this culture, having a wife that got pregnant ahead of time, either he did it, and that makes him look like he's a heathen, or some other man did it, and it looks like he's been, like, you know, cucked, like we said, like cuckolded. That's weird. It's not looking good for Joe. So on top of that, okay, so JT, you've been in the car for 8 hours with your wife, right? Your pregnant wife. You've been riding nonstop. Let's make it 13 hours. No, let's make it 20 hours. No, let's make it for an entire month of just riding with your wife. Pregnant. Right? No escape. You're traveling every day, right? Like, always together. This is like the world's longest car ride with a pregnant wife, right? So you get into town, and it's like 11 o'clock at night, right? And so you're going door to door, and you're like, hey, Aunt Sally, I need a room. And she's like, sorry, your cousin Joe's here with his 14 kids. We don't have room. And I know your wife's pregnant, but, you know, I don't want anything to do with that situation. And so finally Joe, and he goes and he's like knocking on the door, and he's like, hey, innkeeper, like, look, at this point, JT, he's probably knocking on the door of the hotel that you stayed at in Boone when you went to visit Josh. You know, like the $12 special. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah. Mountain City. It was in Mountain City, and it was $4. It was honestly $4.
$4.
Yeah. It cost me $4.
You should have kind of known going into that, to be honest.
Well, I absolutely knew.
Yeah.
But I was just, I'm cheap.
So. Obviously, yeah. I don't think, in this case, I don't think Joseph was being cheap. Joe probably had some money. Literally, the place is packed. There's no room for anyone because they live in Roman rule, and if you don't show up for the census, they might actually kill you for it, for not going there to actually be counted. So we get there, and the innkeeper's like, look, man, I got no more rooms. We are packed, wall to wall. It's more crowded than Athens on game day, JT. I'm talking like there's no more parking spots. If you didn't get there at 8 o'clock in the morning for the tailgate, you're SOL, man. You're walking from South Campus, and you might not get a parking spot there. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got a long walk. It's probably more crowded than bowl game weekend in Atlanta with, you know, a Falcons game on top of it, which is unlikely to happen because the Falcons never actually play that late because they never make the playoffs anymore. But anyway, you get what I'm getting at. Like, it's super crowded. There's no room for anybody. And so the innkeeper says, look, Bethlehem here, we're known as a town that we take care of the sacrificial sheep. Like, the thing Bethlehem is known for is we raise the lambs that get sacrificed in the temple. That's kind of our job here. And look, we've got some houses that have a lambing shed in the back. It's kind of like a little cave, basically. And you can go stay in the stable part or the lambing shed on the back of this thing. And at least it'll be warm. You'll be out of the elements. And everything, you'll be warm for the night. And Joe's like, okay. Well, I got a pregnant wife. I got to be somewhere. Have you ever been that way, JT? Like, where you're on the long trip and you're like, yeah, my kids aren't going to make it another hour in this car. My wife's not going to make it. So you stop at like Hardee's and you're like, this is bad. I don't want Hardee's. No one actually wants to choose to eat Hardee's, but it's the only thing at that restaurant. And you stop at that exit. It's the only place at the exit. But on top of that, it's like shady, rundown part of town. It's like stopping in that, you know, that exit just past College Park between the airport. I stopped there one time because we had a van breakdown in that. I was on a school trip and we stopped at that exit and we pulled down there to the Piggly Wiggly. I kid you not, we had a belt break. We had all the doors locked because it was scary as heck. And two drunk dudes came up and tried to help us fix the car. And we appreciated the help, but they weren't helping, and it was scary as crap. You know, I mean,
yeah,
that's kind of
I've been in this same area where one night we were going back to a friend's place, and we decided we were going to pick up some beers to go back to his place. They wouldn't even let us in the gas station. The guy fed us, I think, 18 cans through the banker's slot in the window and then told us to go. Like, go, get out.
before you get robbed.
Yeah, right, yeah. It was like, no one comes in here after dark. Like,
yeah.
That's not happening.
Exactly.
We're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, bad part of town.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, look, I don't know if Bethlehem had that kind of crime, but the gist is, this was not the reputable part of town, right? Like, Joe's a reputable dude. He's got a wife. And I think a lot of people make it out like they were broke and were having to stay someplace like really cheap. No. There was just literally they had nice places there. They would have been happy to stay, but there was no room. No actual rooms were available. So anyway, we know the story. They go to the lambing shed. While there, Mary gives birth, right? And they wrap him in swaddling clothes, and we'll get back to that here in a minute. So when Jesus is born, we need to understand something about Bethlehem. Close by, there are shepherds. And it says certain shepherds were keeping watch by night. Now, here's the thing. If you do some study in JT, and I'm not going to go into all the details, but you find out it was actually illegal to raise sheep in the wilderness of that part of Israel, right? except for in Bethlehem, there was a special group of shepherds that raised sacrificial lambs for Passover. And it was their whole job to raise these lambs, and they had to do it in a very specific way. They had to stay at, the lambs had to be outside for 365 days before they ever came inside after they were born, right? They had a tower there that these shepherds would stay in, you know, and we read the verse that says they were keeping watch over their flocks by night, right? Like, so the implication here, based off some study people have done, is that very possibly these guys were up in this tower that existed there where they actually, like, watched over the sheep. But these men were probably dirty shepherds, but they had a little bit of honor in the room because they raised the special sheep. But they were still just farmers, man. They were farmers that knew what they were doing. And so they're out there and they're keeping watch by night. When all of a sudden, in the sky, what appears? What appears, JT?
Well, it's the Christmas star.
Okay.
Which some tell us now is Saturn and Jupiter close together, which neither of those are stars. So I don't know how that's a Christmas star at all.
I like how
call it two planets close together. That's what it is.
But actually, JT, I don't know if it was a star or not. What I do know is that above them, the heavenly host suddenly appeared. Now, the way we like to the way we've always done it is if I told you that angels appeared over the shepherds, what is your general picture that you imagine? Based off of our Christmas stories and how we tend to do them.
A harp, a halo, some wings.
Yes.
Maybe you get Christopher Lloyd in an umpire's cap.
Okay.
Like, yeah, you know, yeah, from okay. Angels in the Outfield.
Sure.
Just try to get this baseball centric. Maybe something along those.
And of course, they're singing, Gloria. Right. I mean, that's kind of the way we do the painting, right? But that's a very, very, very wrong image. I can't emphasize enough how wrong that image is. So basically, there's all these shepherds, they're watching their sheep, right, JT? When suddenly, over up in the sky, an entire army of giant men, for lack of a better term, appear dressed in full armor. JT, have you ever seen the haka that the New Zealand All Blacks do?
Yes.
Like their little dance thing?
It's matter of fact, I remember, of course, I'll pull a Georgia reference here, but we played Hawaii in the Sugar Bowl, and the whole team got out before the game and did the haka.
Yes, it's so cool.
And it's intimidating. It's kind of cool and crazy. Yeah, it's nuts. I want to learn it just like so I can have my kids like, we're doing it in the yard before school, and my neighbors just think we're a bunch of weirdos.
I love
it. That would be awesome.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, I think every football team should do it just because it looks amazing. I also think, like, a whole group of men should be a part of that because it's, like, really cool to see. Like there's a video on YouTube of, like, all these schoolboys doing it to honor some teacher that's retiring or whatever. And so it's like a room full of, like, 500 teenage boys, like 14, 15 years old, and they're just like full on into it, like beating their chest and doing the with their tongue stuck out, you know, full on like hardcore into it. And I'm like, that's freaking awesome. It's cool too. So anyway, back to our shepherds, right? They're keeping over their watch when suddenly an army appears over their head. And that army is literally like doing a haka. I'm talking like hardcore slapping their chest, beating their swords against their shields, and they're shouting at the top of their lungs in not like a little feminine sort of way. They're shouting, glory to God in the highest, peace on earth, goodwill towards men. And they're like beating their chest. They're saying this for the first time since the tree, right? That tree we talked about from way, 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 way back. For the first time, glory to God in the highest, there can now for the first time be peace, actual peace on earth. And now God, for the very first time, can have goodwill towards men. He hasn't been able to have goodwill towards men because every time he looked at man in the past, all he could see was that good, bad thing in their head, like where they're trying to do it. And none of them ever lived up to being good enough, right? Because the law kind of sucks that way in that if you know to do good and you don't do it, that's a sin, right? Well, all of us kind of suck at knowing to do good and not doing it. In fact, we all do that. We're all good at knowing something good and then not doing the good thing we know. So that makes us all sinners, according to the Bible and according to this story. So suddenly there's an army. I'm not talking about like 12 children from your local choir, because they don't have a big enough church to have more than 12 kids, but like every kid that was extra that didn't show up for practice got thrown into the choir as an angel. Do you remember that, JT? Like there's like six kids that are always there. They're Mary, Joseph. They're the ones that got the lines. And then all the kids that just happened to show up that Sunday that didn't normally ever come to practice or anything like that, they put them in as angels to be in the back. And then we get the Peanuts version on top of that, and it's like, and in that same hour, there were shepherds who were sleeping. And like, we got this little kid voice, and we've got this, like, this whole picture of this, like, really orderly, sweet little scene of angels. No, these shepherds were scared of their mind, JT. I'm talking, like, suddenly an army, not, like, 12 people. Like, let's say, let's just imagine it's, like, 1,000 angels. It's probably bigger than that, but let's assume it's, like, 1,000 angels are suddenly in the sky over their head doing a haka, screaming out, glory to God in the highest, peace on earth, goodwill towards men. You know what I mean? Like, they're, like, this full-on...
Yeah, because remember in the Bible, before this, when there was talk of armies, they would talk about, you know, the tribes of Israel and, yeah, and of Judah, and they would number in the thousands. Yeah, you know, they right. had 18,000 able-bodied men. So when what the word that they would use for armies didn't mean a group of like, you know, 12 or 15
right.
guys.
Right.
Like it was a legitimate army.
And these guys were pretty familiar with armies, seeing as how they were ruled over by the greatest army, arguably, that the world had ever, definitely at that point that the world had ever known, and maybe even now, and that was the Roman army. Roman army famous for being legions, right? Like, they're legions of 1,000 men, and they had lots of them. So, again, these shepherds are freaking out. You know what I'm saying? Like redneck JT that's been out there taking care of the sheep suddenly has an entire army show up over his head, chanting and singing wildly. I think I would listen to what they had to say too, wouldn't you? I mean, like, I would be like, oh, you want me to do what? Oh, yes, sir. I guess it's what you say. Like, okay. But so the angel looks at him and says, look, close by, a savior is born, right? You need to go to him. Now, this is what's really cool about this. These were the shepherds who took care of Passover lambs. They took care of the sacrificial lambs. They were the ones that inspected them and made sure they came into the world the right way to be the sacrificial lamb, right? So these shepherds take off, and it says they came into the city, but these shepherds obviously knew where to go, right? Like, it wasn't like they were hunting about trying to find Jesus. They obviously knew there's probably like this limited set of places that we have, quote, a stable or a lambing location. So they go and they get there and they find him laid in the manger, not just a manger, but they've laid him in the actual manger that Passover lambs are laid into. The lamb that will be sacrificed to cover men's sin, right? The little lamb that they did each year, that they cut his throat at a year old and spilled the blood everywhere and sacrificed him on the altar, and it was a bloody affair, and they killed so many of them every year that the streets would run knee-deep in blood in Jerusalem, right? Those lambs, this is where they were born, was in Bethlehem, and taken care of in Bethlehem. And they go and they find Jesus laying in the manger of the sacrificial lamb. Now, when they get there, they worship him, and they call him Christ the Lord, right? Now, our story that we tend to see is like, okay, 30 minutes later, three wise men showed up. That's like this nice little neat Americanized story. Like, we got three little wise men that show up. Truth is, wise men not there the night Jesus was born. Ever. Never showed up. Not that night. Like, if you were waiting on the wise man to show up in this story, you got some waiting to do. All right? Now, cousin JT that was out watching the sheep, you had a little baby that had been born just a few months ago, right? A little boy. His name... we'll just call him Bo, right? Like, he's got a little Bo Peep, right? born a little while ago, right? He worships him. So just keep that in your mind, and we'll continue on. So a few days old, Jesus is born. Mary and Joseph bring him to the local temple. They present him there, and there's two cool people there, Anna and Simeon. Anna is a little old lady who has been widowed. She got married, and 7 years after they've been married, her husband died. When she was young, she's lived the rest of her life in the temple, worshiping God, sacrificing. Says she lived there day and night, so she literally lived at the temple. Simeon, old man, probably like, I don't know, 85, 86 years old. And at that time, that was like an ancient man, because life expectancy around this time, 40 years old. You lived to be about 40. If you lived much longer than that, it was pretty impressive, right? Like 40 was old man country. So Simeon's there. Simeon, the Lord has told him, says, look, you'll get to see the promised child before you're born. Simeon sees him and says, my God, I get to meet the Messiah, the Savior of man. Now, we use that term Messiah, JT. You've probably heard that word a lot. But in Jewish culture, they all constantly expected the Messiah. Now, what they thought was that the Messiah was going to be a revolutionary leader that would raise up and lead them against Rome or whatever defending army was that was dominating them, and would lead them back to the promised land, right? Like to this great place. And about every 30 years, a new Messiah would pop up in Jerusalem. And he would get this band of followers, and they would rebel, and then the Romans would come in and kill everyone, right? And then people were like, oh, I guess he wasn't the Messiah. We just kind of thought he was, right? So when these people are saying the Messiah is born, this is revolt terminology, right? Like they're thinking political revolt. They're thinking make Jerusalem great again. Right, that's their thing is make Israel great again. We're gonna take over the Romans, Israel first, right? Like that's our thing. And
Iga,
yeah, yeah, it was Iga. I like that. Iaga, yeah. No, Miga, make Israel Miga. Great again. I'll get there. Yeah, I got you. Miga, Migos. That's a singer. Anyway, so Simeon and these guys, they pray over a really cool moment. So an angel appears to Joseph and says, look, dude, things are about to get rough around here because your kid's getting called Messiah. That scares a lot of people. And so you guys need to go to Egypt. So they go to Egypt, right? So rewind the story a little bit. There's this group of Saudi oil princes. Okay, they're not actually oil princes, but they are Saudi princes, right? They live in the desert. They're Arabian princes. Arabian nights, like Arabian days. Oh, sorry. Okay. Anyway, JT, there's this whole group of them, probably around 40 or 50. They're all princes, though. They have like lots of people that live underneath them. I guess you'd call them like caravan lords, if you want to look at it that way. Nomads. You know, we think of the term nomad where they like, but they're like a king over or a prince over this village / group of people that are all there people, and they're very rich, they're very wealthy. We end up calling them kings in a modern terminology, or wise men. They actually were studiers of the stars that we kind of now know as Zoroastrianism. It was kind of a freaky other religion they know about. Look, Zoroasters, this is the best way to describe it, JT. People that believe in Zoroastrianism is this: they are the stats nerds of baseball. They studied the stars, and based on the stars, they knew how things were supposed to happen. They knew numbers. They knew dates. They knew all these specific things.
Zoroastrianism?
Zoroastrianism, yes.
Zoroastrianism.
Yes, I think that's the way it's pronounced. Good word. Yeah, I think that's the way it's pronounced. Anyway, they studied the stars, star charts, maps. They were some of the people that created that stuff. They were considered wise men because they could actually like read the signs of the times based on the stars. They knew where they were. They could walk through the desert using the stars and like chart their path across, right? Like these were smart dudes. They figured out calendars. They were some of the first people to ever like put together calendars that actually made sense and worked. So anyway, these guys see the stars in the sky, whether or not it was Jupiter and whatnot, Saturn. What? Wait, which planets was it again?
Jupiter and Saturn.
Okay, I was right. Jupiter and Saturn.
Yeah. More poster jar. Uranus, still not visible.
Still not visible. I'm going to leave that alone. Anyway, so these guys, they basically read the stars, and the stars tell them, hey, a new king's been born. And they don't believe this is like some mild king. They're like, new super king has been born, right? They don't have any Jewish tradition in the traditional sense. These are Saudi oil princes. You know what I mean? Like, these guys, they're kind of crazy. If you trace them all the way back, they probably go back to Abraham in really weird ways. They're probably moon worshipers. Abraham was probably like a forefather of Zoroastrianism, if you go like way back, because it says he was a moon worshiper. Anyway, these guys are like, yes, let's go worship the king. So they come into Bethlehem area, and they're like, okay, well, if there's a new king, maybe he's connected to the old king, right? So they go to the king over that area, which is Herod. You ever heard of that guy, Herod?
King Herod, yes.
Yeah. So they tell Herod, said, hey, look, we heard there's a, we believe there's a new king that's been born. And Herod's like, what? not cool. Not cool. Because this is why it's not cool, JT, is not only would a new king replace Herod possibly, but if this is another rebellion, if Herod doesn't crush it, the Romans will come and they will kill Herod. They'll kill a whole bunch of Jews and they will replace Herod. Right? Because Herod's like a, kind of a semi-Jewish governor slash king. Romans tried to like let people kind of keep up their whole appearance of having their own government, even though they were really the ones in charge. Herod's kind of that guy, right? So if the rebellion happens, though, Rome's like, out with Herod. We'll just kill him and like we'll put somebody else in charge. So Herod's not a big fan of this. And so these wise princes, right, probably a caravan of about 40 of them, they kind of get the picture. His hair dude's not really on the same page we are. He's not really on board with meeting this new king. And even though he says, hey, let us know if you find this new king, they're like, I kind of get the vibe he really doesn't want to meet him for the right reasons, right? So they kind of sneak out the back door and don't let the prince, don't let King Herod know that they're leaving. And they go a different way. Well, Herod is kind of ticked about all this. And Herod's like, I'm not taking any chances on getting my head cut off by the Romans. And he tells his soldiers what, JT? Do you remember?
Did he tell them to go out and kill everybody, the firstborn?
Ah, go out and
was
kill
it the first, was it?
Go out and kill every male child under the age
every
of two.
Every male child. I can't remember if it was every male child or just the firstborn.
Yeah, all the male children under the age of two. And so our buddy JT, the shepherd farmer, his son Bo dies, right? This guy that witnessed the birth of the new king, his kid's dead because of the new king. It's a tough place, man. When change comes, it's not easy, right? Like, it upsets the apple cart. It makes things difficult to... Things don't happen the way you expect them to. Sometimes there's this promise that comes to us, JT, this cool thing, this, oh, man, there's this future for us. But the distance between the promise and the payoff, there's a lot of persecution, right? There's a price in the middle. And the price gets expensive sometimes. Anyway, these kings slip out. They continue to follow the star. And they probably most likely find Jesus in Egypt. And they come and they worship him and they bring gifts. And it's not just frankincense, gold, and myrrh, like three little bottles. No, 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 no. They bring a lot of money. And I'm not talking about just a little bit of money. They bring a lot of money. These are really rich guys. Jesus is loaded. Joseph and Mary, lots of money after this. 40 Saudi oil princes just called you the king of kings and left you a gift. JT, how are you feeling if 40 Saudi oil princes show up at your door tonight and say, you are the king of kings. We're here to worship you. JT, let us give of our Saudi oil. You now have a place in the UAE. UAE? What is that place where they have...
The UAE, the United
UAE,
Arab Emirates.
There we go. Where they have all the UFC fights so they can kill people and
yes.
get away with it.
Yes.
Right, right. We own all of that, so now we give you big lots of money. Have lots of money, JT. Have lots and lots and lots of money.
Ken, this is such a racist impression that you're doing.
I mean, it probably is a little
bit.
But it's also kind of what happened. They brought lots and lots of money, and they left it at Jesus' door. Now, a lot of people have a hard time with that because they like this picture of Jesus being poor. But this is what happened. First, as a baby, Jesus shows up as the family part, JT. He's the Passover. He's the covenant. He's the payoff. He's the price. He is the Passover lamb that's going to die for us all. But in Egypt, he shows up as the king. And he's not just a little Passover lamb anymore. He's the king. He's dominion. He is the future, the real Messiah incarnate. Can you imagine, JT, what you would give if you could actually meet the greatest king to ever live?
Well.
And you really thought he was the greatest king to ever live? I mean, do you know how many people are like emptied their bank accounts to support Trump? I'm serious. Like, or Biden. Or fill in the blank, Obama? Oh, good Lord. People went crazy and gave money to Obama, right? Now, imagine that, like if you're convinced that this other person is truly a king. So we know the story, and I'm not going to go into detail of the rest of the story, but here, and we know he grows up and becomes the sacrifice, and that story's super important, and I love to share it with somebody sometime. But here's where I want to come back to, JT. But the reason this story's super cool is because, and I know Christmas time didn't happen the same time of year that we present it, right? Like, it probably did not happen December 25th. That wasn't when Jesus was born. In fact, they kind of figure it was probably more like August or something. Anyway, we celebrate it then because our Christian fathers that set aside the date and started it, they said December 25th is 3 days or 4 days after the darkest night of the year. It is the darkest moment. It is the place of the shortest day, right? Like, darkness has its greatest hold. But in the darkness, there's a light that still shines. And in the chaos, God hovers in the middle of it. And for those of you that listen, there's a lot of chaos that's going on this year. COVID, presidential elections, Gardner Minshew not getting the start all year for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Right.
I mean, lots and lots and lots of UGA losing because we wouldn't start a quarterback. Anyway, there's been a lot of tribulation, and some of you, it's been a lot worse than the menial stuff I'm kind of laughing about there. Some of you have had to deal with death. Some of you, maybe your personal life has gone to heck in 2020. This is what I want you to leave this podcast with this year to wrap it up, JT, and that is this, that in the darkness and in the midst of chaos, Christmas reminds us that no matter how dark, no matter how chaotic, no matter how ashamed you should be because you're 15 and you're losing your mind and you have no control and you've lost all your future, no matter if you're 30 and you feel cucked and your family's falling apart and you're not sure and you've got to make all these journeys and transitions and nothing seems available, right? No matter how packed the inn is, no matter how much people haven't made room for you, no matter how much you feel as an outsider, no matter how much you feel like you've been stuck in a back corner and there's no place for you, there's always a light that shines in the darkness. There's a spirit that hovers over the chaos. There's the Spirit of the Lord that hovers over Mary's heart, right, and overshadows her. And the story of Christmas, JT, is a story of light. It's a story of hope. It's a story of an army of angels showing up to average Joe Shepherd farmers and declaring, being the first ones to see this army show up in full force and might and say, glory to God in the highest, peace on earth for the very first time. We can now bring peace, goodwill towards men. God has goodwill towards you again. He can now favor you because just like, and for those of you that may know more of the Christian story, just as Abraham offered his son and God stopped before the sacrifice, because he saw by faith that Abraham would follow through with it, God could offer his son, and by faith in that moment when the light showed up, he could begin to operate as if his son had already died. It's a cool story, JT. It's for me and you, it's a lot more than a story. You know, it's but I do think the story is important for people to hear. And I think it's, I think a lot of times we whitewash the story, literally. Jesus was a pretty brown baby, you know. Yeah, just being honest here. He looked a lot more like Osama bin Laden than he looked like Brad Pitt. Let me be real honest with you, despite what people like to pretend.
Both good-looking guys. Not saying anything.
Nah, I kind of think Jesus probably wasn't all that good-looking. I think he was pretty average Jew. You ever seen a good-looking Jew?
That's in the eye of the beholder.
I'm just saying, like, you know, big old nose, right? Like, scraggly beard. It probably wasn't very good, you know?
I think Seinfeld's a handsome fella. I think he's handsome. He's not
Yeah, you know, anyway. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I'm not saying there's ever been a good looking one, just the odds aren't great. You know what I'm saying? The odds aren't great here.
Gotcha. Okay.
I think the image I struggle with the most, and it's funny because we try to make God in our image rather than us in his. So
sure. So
we paint Jesus as white with long hair and flowing mane. You ever seen a Jew?
Great abs.
Have you ever seen a Jew with long,
blondish
brown hair, like flowing, like we like to do for Jesus? It's the like funniest image ever. He's like the most Anglo-Saxon Jesus ever, you know? Like, he's white as can be. And I'm like, you know, a lot of people are going to be shocked when they get to heaven and realize he's nothing like you've been told.
I'm just glad they didn't have, like, Tom Hanks play him in Passion of the Christ or something. You know, like, Kevin Costner as Jesus.
Yeah,
like, Jim Caviezel has kind of a Mediterranean
at least a little bit. Yeah, but it's more Jim Caviezel's far more Spanish than he is Jewish. Yeah, let's be honest.
Right.
You know, like,
but he's got a flavor.
They went for the good looking Mediterranean rather than he probably looks more like Eli. What was his last name that played the ugly in Good, the Bad, the Ugly? Eli. I can't think of what his last name was.
It's a deep dive there.
He was totally a Jew. But anyway, that being said.
Totally a Jew.
Well, he is. He's totally a Jew. GAT, the point of this was like that there's hope in the midst of the chaos. There's hope in the darkness. And that no matter how bad things look in the world, maybe you're mad about the presidential election. Maybe you're mad about something Trump's done. Maybe you're mad about COVID. Maybe you're mad about not COVID. Maybe you're mad about masks. Whatever it is. In the midst of the chaos of your life, there's a light that's brighter. And it'll always shine in the midst of the darkness brighter than it does even in the day. Right?
There you go. No, I agree. And whenever you think that you aren't up to snuff, that you can't get the job done, that you can't be used, remember the king of the world was born into the smell of manure and straw and gunk, and later rode into town on a donkey, and you know that it's crazy how the Bible's full of examples of people, ordinary people, sinful people, broken people, used for great purposes.
That it was. He had a tax collector and a zealot on his team. Do you know the kind of fights they had talking at night? Holy smokes.
Should be interesting.
Oh, man. Those people were like at odds. A zealot hated tax collectors. Tax collectors hated zealots.
Who likes tax collectors today?
Who likes zealots today? I mean,
yeah.
Lord help. People don't even like Joel Osteen. And he's not even much of a zealot. But I'm just saying, like, you know.
we'll save the Joel Osteen debate for a later show.
You don't have to like Joel, but why do people hate some guy that just smiles all the time? I've never understood it.
Because anyway, he smiles all the time, and it's creepy.
It is a little creepy.
Freaks me out.
But still, there's nothing wrong with smiling. I mean, yeah.
Jesus didn't walk around just smiling at people all the time.
He might have.
It's weird.
I like the idea of happy Jesus. People don't ever, like, picture Jesus laughing. You ever seen a single picture of Jesus laughing?
No, I need one now.
There's a really good painting. One. My mother has one framed, and she hangs it in her house, and is smiling, laughing Jesus. It's
God.
He's very
God
white.
Invented humor.
He's very white in the picture, but it's still a great picture of Jesus laughing. It's fantastic.
It's Jesus being played by Jeff Goldblum.
Yes, very much.
I think
so.
It's
actually not that far. It might
pretty
even
sure
be
he's
more
Jewish.
Like Jesus played by The Mask. Like he's got full on teeth and laughing. It's pretty great, but.
So if you had to recast The Passion of the Christ today, who would be your leading man? Would you say Eugene Levy Are you gonna piggyback off the Schitt's Creek?
He's probably a little old at this point.
A little old? Maybe his son?
He could be Joseph. He could pull off Joseph. Okay. Although that might be bad American Pie vibes for Passion of the Christ. You know, maybe that's not the best example.
Maybe. But it's just a movie.
Yeah,
it's just
it is. Trying to think, who's a good ugly teenager? I don't know many. You know, like movie stars are too pretty. I'm just saying.
I don't care about movies starring teenagers anymore. I'm too old for that.
That's true.
If it's a movie starring a bunch of teenagers, it's not made for me.
That's probably true. It's very rare that that's not the case. So, yeah.
That's not my demographic. You know?
Yeah. I always find it funny how our best renditions do a terrible, like Passion of the Christ, right? Super good in some ways.
Awesome.
But still very, the culture still gets lensed through like this semi-American version of the culture.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
But they did a good job of being correct with the Aramaic, with the subtitles.
Yeah.
At least that brought a level of authenticity to the film.
For sure.
But the problem in the movie is it's in that Schindler's List, Life is Beautiful.
Yeah, it's hard to watch.
Super hard to watch film.
Yeah,
right,
very.
Right.
I cry like a baby.
Like it's not something you're like excited to turn on. Oh, I love this. You know, it's tough.
I saw somebody that said they watched Passion of the Christ 50 times, and I'm like, there's something wrong with you. I can't watch it. I've watched it like maybe three times because it's just hard to watch that. You know,
that's a weirdo. That's like someone saying I watch YouTube 9/11 footage all the time. Like, that's stuff to watch. Why are you doing this? What's wrong with
you? Wait, don't you do that? I
love like some of the documentaries.
Okay. I'm just checking. Wasn't it your son that drew like a picture of that or something?
Yes, it was. Yes, he did. He drew a picture of the 9/11 towers for his preschool class. Wow. I got a note from the teacher.
Imagine that. Yeah. Yeah. That'd be like if somebody actually drew like a graphic picture of Jesus for their kid. Like, you know, it'd be kind of weird.
Right. Like a gruesome picture. Like I was just trying to be informative as a parent and talk to him as a young, you know, adult and be level with him.
Nice.
And he took it a little far.
Well, you know, it's just so funny to me how we mess up stories. Like we try to change them to make them super palatable and white. And maybe white's not the right word, but
no, marketable.
Yes, like Jesus, we give him 40 lashes, right? Like when he's headed to the cross, 40 lashes. But the Romans beat him. Romans didn't have to obey the rule of 40 lashes, so they probably beat him like 150 times, right? Like till he couldn't move.
Well, I mean, think of all the books of Bible stories your children have.
Yeah, and how wrong they all are.
How wrong they are, and how brutal. Even just like, you know, take some books of the Old Testament that are all it is like they went and they took on the Amalekites and they beheaded all their children and slaughtered all their dogs.
Right.
And you're like, what? Like, whoa.
And Saul loses because he didn't kill them all. Like he kept some of them alive and God's like, I hate you because you didn't keep them alive. Because
you didn't finish the job.
You didn't finish the
job.
Then
you pick up your kid's Bible story book and it's like, Noah built an ark, and then it rained a bunch, and all the animals were happy.
Yeah, exactly. In the end. That's like the limit of it. Nobody talks about about Noah getting drunk after all this happened because he recognizes that he just
or
killed.
Or other people going, drowning to death.
Noah's like, I just killed the entire known world. I think I'm going to go get drunk. You know, like, maybe I didn't do it, but the God I served wiped out everyone.
Naked and drunk, right? He was
naked and drunk, and his kids walked in on him. Yeah.
Right. He was the original Randy Travis.
There you go. He was digging up bones. What can you say? Digging up bones in the mud of all the people that died. Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. That joke was a little lowbrow, to be
honest. You had to reach for it.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's the story of Christmas, man. It's I don't know why we water them down is the thing. Like, we're fine with watching, you know, graphic murder on television with like intricate details of stories of Dexter wrapped this person in plastic and cut his head off and stabbed a knife through his heart and then chopped him into pieces and dumped him in the ocean. And we're like, okay, that's awesome. And then we're like, yeah, but Jesus, he took three little nails to the hands and somebody stuck him in the side and he died. And we're like, not exactly. Not quite how that happened. just saying. But yeah. Anyway, JT, Merry Christmas, bud.
Merry Christmas, Ken.
I hope somebody out there heard the Christmas story tonight for the first time in like a full-on kind of, I tried not to be like graphic, but very realistic way. You know,
just the authentic way it's.
You imagine
it's told.
You imagine your wife in labor, and there's a donkey in the corner going, "Yeah." I mean, like right in the middle of this. I mean, and we're not talking about your mother-in-law. I'm just saying, like,
wow.
Just saying. Anyway.
Ken.
Well, there's only one way to end a Christmas episode of Knock on Nation, JT. You know what that is?
Are we taking this to Fort Payne, Alabama?
We might as well take it to Fort Payne, Alabama. Knock on Nation, Merry Christmas, guys. And we appreciate you listening and tuning in with us. And have a Merry Christmas. Enjoy some time with your family. Love you guys.
See you in 2021.
Sing us out, Josh.
By now in New York City, there's snow on the ground. And out in California, the sunshine's falling down. And maybe down in Memphis, Graceland's all in. And in Atlanta, Georgia, there's peace on earth tonight.
Come on, boys.
Christmas in Dixie. It's snowing in the pines. Merry Christmas from Dixie. To everyone tonight.
It's windy in Chicago. The bloggers are out of school. There's magic in Motown. The city's on the move. In Jackson, Mississippi, to Charlotte, Carolina, and all across the nation, it's a peaceful Christmas time.
Come on, boys.
It's Christmas in D.C. It's snowing in the pines. Merry Christmas from D.C. to everyone tonight.
And from Nakahoma Nation, Merry Christmas to
tonight.
Thanks for listening to the nation's leading replacement-level podcast. Nakahoma Nation is brought to you by Nakahoma Nation patrons. To become a patron, visit patreon.com/Nakahoma Nation. For new episodes and content, visit nakahomanation.com. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at NakahomaNTN. Special thanks to Research Assistant Braves Options Guy and spiritual advisor John D. Howard. See you next week, knuckleheads.